mistletoe, I'm gonna get to know you better. This Christmas, and as we trim the tree, how much fun it's gonna be together. This Christmas, the fireside is blazing.
Hello, welcome back to A Place for Film, the official ISMA podcast. I am your co-host, David Carter, and joining me is my co-host, the Mary Elizabeth Rell. I don't know. I couldn't think
Make sure you pronunciate that pretty well.
The Mary?
Well, yeah. If you don't say Mary, it could say married.
Marie?
Very close, which I'm not.
So here's the thing. I can't discern the difference between certain vowel sounds. So like pin, and pin all sound the same to me. And I probably said them all the same
you
way.
Say them all.
Yeah. It's the same thing with Mary. Where it's like, I know A and E have different sounds. Technically, it's very subtle. I just lump them together.
I will say Mary and Mary. Now I don't know what I'm saying. But
exactly.
Those two words sound much closer than like pin and pen.
Correct. But hey, you're here. It's the Christmas season. And it's the last night of Hanukkah. I'm making latkes tonight.
Oh, jealous.
I might force my partner to watch Eight Crazy Nights with me because there aren't really a lot of Hanukkah movies, honestly. And we already watched the Rugrats Hanukkah special.
I don't know that I've seen that.
Eight Crazy Nights?
No, the Rugrats.
Oh, go to Hulu. It's the first episode of like season 3 or 4 or something like that. And it's probably the best condensed version of like what Hanukkah is about, because I don't think a lot of Gentiles know what Hanukkah is about.
Yeah.
Besides the fact that like it's 8 nights and they might know that there's some oil involved, but like that's about it.
Yeah. I saw someone tweet about the vaccine and how some of the vial, like they fill the vials so that there's for sure like 5 doses of vaccine in the vial. But they overfill. And this is like just a common thing that happens with a lot of things like this. And somebody was like, oh, it's like Hanukkah.
The oil.
They make it last longer.
Yes. No, I'm in the holiday spirit. It may not sound like it. I'm also a little tired. Like I said, there might be some construction noises in the background of this episode. Unfortunately, they are doing construction outside my house. This is our very merry, traditional holiday movie episode. Although, based on the picks that we did, while all these picks are very much Christmas is a part of them, it is really funny that none of the picks are like, you know, a Charlie Brown Christmas special or How the Grinch Stole Christmas or Elf, you know, and like, it's none of those. So we're still a little bit off the beaten path with these. One of these movies I never even heard of until Elizabeth had picked it. So.
I'm getting very excited, though, but there's a chance he doesn't like it, so...
I mean, I got some thoughts on this movie, both good and I think it's kind of a wild movie. Like, don't get me wrong. I enjoyed it, but it's a wild movie.
Yes.
But what room do I have to talk? Because my movie's a wild movie, too. So
they're all wild. They all are kind of like, I can't believe.
Yes. Our guest movie is also pretty wild. I'm just so used to it at this point because I've seen it a few times.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get to those, we will talk about our upcoming schedule. Elizabeth, so... I know we don't really have very much on the immediate horizon that already hasn't been advertised multiple times in this podcast, but there is something we should probably advertise that's happening in the new year in January. What is that?
Yeah. So, like David said, there's nothing new the rest of the year. We do have some streaming things still going, so check those out on our website. But the big thing coming up will be on Wednesday, January 13th, when we come back for our spring semester. For those of you that don't know, the IU Cinema was opened in January of 2011. So if you can do some quick math in your head, that means we're celebrating our 10th anniversary on January.
Oh, oh my God. I truly can't believe it that I've been going to the cinema for 10 years at this
Man,
point.
That's a whole decade.
A whole decade. I was 20 years old the first movie I ever saw at the cinema. That's wild.
Baby David.
I should have been practicing saxophone, but you know.
Priorities. Yeah, so this is going to be all about the IU cinema and those of us who call it home, which is a very many people, I believe, and it's a nice group to have around. But at 7 p.m., we're going to log on, and everyone's going to be like, oh, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? I can tell you that there's going to be some trivia happening. I can tell you there's going to be some story sharing. There's going to be some reading some of the new book. If you haven't heard, IU Cinema has like a coffee table book coming out later next year. So excited to give it to everyone on my Christmas list in 2021. And there's going to be a special guest. Can you guess who it is?
Ooh, I have an idea. I mean, I should spoil it. I will be attending / like in this event. So I kind of know.
I was like, it's on our website, so you can guess, David.
Yes, exactly. I mean, but also about that coffee table book, guess who's got a little tidbit in there?
I'm going to guess you.
Yeah, I have a tidbit in there. Yay! Which may or may not be the memory that I share at the 10th anniversary stream. But aww, we'll see. I might change it to another favorite memory.
Yeah, we're all going to be sharing our memes.
Yeah, it should be a good time. I mean, old and new faces alike will all be present.
Are you going to guess the special guest?
I mean, is it John?
Yes. John Vickers will be back.
John's coming back. We love him. We miss him. I should send him a Christmas email now that I'm thinking about it. Anyway.
We have an email like setting up rehearsal for this, and it was like weird to see his name back in our emails.
Yeah, but he's in his Everyman's Gmail account.
He is.
Not his IU account.
Yeah, I think that's gone.
It's like when Mr. Rogers would come inside of his house and take off his outside shoes and put on his inside shoes.
And the cute little cardigan.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
That's how I like to picture John, just chilling at home in his slippers and his cardigan.
Do you think John owns a cardigan?
I don't know.
John, if you listen to this episode, I know you listen to the podcast sometime, can you please leave a 5-star review of our podcast and then put whether or not you wear cardigans in your review? That's my call to action to start getting people to review our podcast, which our podcast does have one review, one 5-star review, but like, oh, sorry, one rating, not review.
Okay. Do we know who it's from?
No. Oh, although okay. I guess I should rate our own podcast. Although is that stuffing the ballot box? I don't know.
It's not from either of us. So.
Yes. So please join into that on January 13th. What time will that be, Elizabeth?
7 p.m.
7 p.m.
It'll be via Zoom. We are still virtual for the spring, so.
Correct. With maybe some developments for some possibilities happening.
Yeah, we'll see how all this vaccination stuff goes, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll keep that vague, but I think the cinema's seeing how things are going to go on a nationwide level before we start making some big risky moves.
Oh, yeah. Everything is, well, I guess we'll wait and see where we are.
Mm-hmm. With that, unless there's something else we should mention.
I won't go over every specific thing. I will say that we are starting to put our spring schedule up on the website. So make sure and go to check that out if you're looking for specific.
Yeah, we're bringing back some series.
Yeah, there are some series coming back. We do have some staff selects coming back virtually. We have got City Lights coming back. Underground is coming back. I think we're trying to do maybe some silent film with live, quote unquote, live music by mm-hmm. students. We've got exploring Israeli Palestinian relations. We've got more IU 2020 coming up. Those two events went really well in the fall. So we're doing two more so we can talk to all the rest of the students.
Sounds great. I'm excited for all that. I'm just excited that the cinema is going to, you know, move closer to having like series and like things like that, you know, get more invested. Not that I wasn't invested. I'm still planning on watching another round at some point just because that movie sounds insane.
Yeah. we will have more streaming too, but none of that is up on the website yet.
Elizabeth, there's been someone sitting very patiently on this call waiting to say words.
She's been very quiet.
What? Well, not what is this person? Who is this person?
This person is a human.
What species is this person? Are they a carbon-based life form?
I hope so. So our guest this week, if you've been around all this semester virtually, or if you've been around the cinema in the last like 2 years, you've seen her. You know her wonderful fashionable outfits. She always looks on point. This is our marketing and programming coordinator and social media specialist. Please give it up for Alyssa Brooks.
Hello. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Of course. Like everyone on the iCinema staff, we have wanted to have you on at some point. Just because we love talking to our colleagues, especially because usually the context in the before times we'd see each other in is just like, you know, you and Elizabeth have to like usher people and like be on the radio all the time and not really a lot of time just like hang out and talk at all.
Yeah.
David's like standing in the lobby and we're listening to people talk in our heads and we're like,
yes, and I'm trying to talk to you about like whatever I just saw at the AMC or whatever. I'm like, while you're running around putting out fires.
Pretty much.
But it's wonderful to have you here. Thank you for joining us on our holiday episode. You chose you chose what I would call a new traditional Christmas movie. Like as in I feel like now it's been inducted into the canon.
A modern classic for sure.
Yes, a modern classic. But before we get to that, we'd like to just pick your brain a little bit and all of us talk about what did everyone watch this week.
It was December 24th on Hollis Ave at the dark when I seen a man chilling with his dog in the park. I approached him very slowly with my heart full of fear. Looked at his dog, oh my god, a ill reindeer. But then I was ill because the man had a beard and a bag full of goodies, 12 o'clock at noon. So I turned my head a second and the man was gone. But he must have dropped his wallet back dead on the lawn.
Okay.
I picked the wallet
up and then I took Elizabeth. The paws, took out the lights, and then it called.
Yeah. So this week I watched the three movies we're talking about and I didn't really have time for other movies, but in terms of television, we've mainly been watching two things. We've been watching The OC, which I've been very surprised that my partner actually really enjoys watching, and he even sings the song along with me at the beginning. So we have a convert. But me alone by myself, I've been watching Grey's Anatomy, which I don't know if either of you two have seen Grey's Anatomy.
This is the second time you've brought up Grey's Anatomy and what we watched this week.
I have to talk about this.
No, I'm not. Let me make it clear. I'm not anti this. I just think it's really funny because this is going to be because that show's like 20 seasons or something like that. Is this going to come up every couple of weeks?
Get ready. Everyone's going to get updates on my journey because I'm only on season two.
Okay. Well, no. To answer your question, I would watch an occasional episode of Grey's Anatomy with my mom when I was in high school. If that tells you how long this show's been on television.
Cute.
Yeah, I think I watched through maybe season three, but yeah, that feels like eternity ago. I mostly remember the music.
This episode, so I'm going to talk about a specific episode, but Alyssa, you will most definitely remember this because it also has iconic music in it. So this is the episode. It wasn't even the season finale, which it was so dramatic for not being a season finale, but whatever. But I started the episode and Meredith wakes up and she like doesn't want to get out of bed. She's like, I have a bad feeling about today. Like, I just feel like I'm going to die today. I'm not going to get out of bed. I'm just going to live with this feeling. And then everyone makes her get out of bed because she has to go to work. She gets to work and then like this ambulance comes in and everyone's like, oh, okay. And this paramedic who's only been on the job for like 2 weeks has her hand inside this man, and this man's wife just like comes out of the ambulance and is like, ah! And she just won't stop screaming. And I'm like looking, I'm like, oh my gosh, that woman looks so familiar. The paramedic is Christina Ricci.
Oh wow. Adam's Family values Christina Ricci.
It was such a weird surprise. I was like, yes, I love Christina Ricci. I can't wait to see what happens. And then they're talking about like what's happened with this man, and they're trying to figure out why he's bleeding. Eventually, it is revealed that him and his friend like to reenact wars like weirdos, and they built their own bazooka. And there is literally an unexploded bazooka inside this man.
What?
So so Christina Ricci cannot remove her hand or move it at all, or this bazooka might explode.
This is the second season of the show, not the 16th.
This is the second season. It's not even a season finale. It's like in the middle of the season.
I thought this was just like a show about that. I thought it was like not sub ER, but like more melodramatic soap opera EER, because there were more emphasis on like the romantic relationships. I wasn't expecting like a Hitchcockian thriller.
It was crazy. This episode I just watched this morning, so it's like fresh in my mind and I can't stop thinking about it, and it was much more than I signed on for this morning. That I was like, oh, it's Friday morning, I've got my scone, like I'm just gonna sit down and watch some Grays. And then it was so dramatic. And one of the doctors, she's having her baby. She's like in labor. But her husband, on the way to the hospital, got into a car accident. So he's having brain surgery right next to the bomb.
Okay. Sure.
Right. You have to have all of the doctors that you care about in proximity to the bomb.
Of course.
So crazy things happened. It was two episode arc too. It was like
a two-parter.
Yeah, so you leave the first episode and you're like, what's gonna happen? I have to immediately watch the next episode.
Oh my god. Well, Elizabeth, if you keep bringing this show to this segment, now my new question is gonna have to be, do you continue to recommend Grey's Anatomy to people? Because I want to see what your relationship with this show is as we go along, if you make it all however many seasons there are.
Yeah, I have three close friends and they all watch and they're all caught up and they talk about the new episodes. And I hear some things like, oh, like they get a little more angry at some of the things that are happening now. So I'm going to assume that they like some of the older ones better.
You still recommend it?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
If you like the, I mean, like you heard what I just told you. If that sounds appealing to you, then watch it. Oh, and there's like doctors having sex in like a closet because they're like, oh my god, there's a bomb, we could die. So like all of the things.
I don't think anyone's going into Grey's Anatomy expecting it to be Mad Men. I think everyone's right. Got their expectations.
Yeah, they know what they're signing up for.
Well, thank you, Elizabeth. I'll go next. I struggled to everything I've watched this week has been for a conversation about something. I've guested on podcasts, I've done the monthly movie roundup, which was just a couple of days ago. So I'm going to have to bring something for another podcast that I've often brought up on this podcast, which is the Blank Check podcast. They are in the back part of Robert Zemeckis's career, this incredibly long miniseries. We are in the we're in the post Castaway era. Let me put it that way. We've gotten through all of the motion captured CGI nightmare movies. And that was its own wild ride. Polar Express and Beowulf and the Christmas Carol with Jim Carrey.
Why did I not know he did Beowulf?
He did Beowulf, which is, of those three movies, I think my favorite, because I don't particularly like Polar Express, unfortunately. I know that is another modern Christmas classic, but I...
But it's scary.
It's so off-putting. Like, I just can't get behind it. But we are now in his, like, prestige drama era, which starts off really strong with the movie Flight, starring Denzel Washington.
Oh yeah, you love this movie.
And me and Ava, past guests, we go to the mat for this movie. It's a movie where Denzel Washington plays a functional alcoholic who, this is the first part of the movie, and then the rest of the movie is like the fallout from this. I'm not spoiling anything. Who successfully lands an airplane that's in like a uncontrolled nosedive. But while he has done this, he was drunk because he is a functional alcoholic. And so the rest of the movie is about like him dealing with the, you know, they have to do an investigation and like he's to deal with like the repercussions of those of his actions, and you know, he is a hero, but you know, the movie asks a lot of these questions. A lot of people think that it's an unsubtle movie, which I think is true. There's a lot of talk about like putting your power into like a, putting yourself into the hands of a higher power, which is one of the AA things you do. And that is true. But while I was researching this movie, I've seen this movie a bunch of times. Apparently this is like a super effective movie for people who have had substance abuse. Like it actually helps them like, you know, start like admitting to themselves that they have problems, which is super interesting because I think this movie gets knocked for like it's the fact that it's so unsubtle about his substance abuse. And it's nice to see that like there's, you know, us as movie people, we view movies as like, well, you're looking for the subtleties, you're looking for like the craft, like, you know, and then you kind of get annoyed if something's like beating you over the head with a hammer. But then you're like, well, yeah, but then normal audiences and other people, they like to get beat over the head with a hammer. It might help them. It might help them, like, you know, with some problems that they're having in their lives. But also just like this movie, because this is a great late era Denzel Washington performance, fully committed. I mean, even the stuff of him just downing like a whole bottle of Jim Beam in his car by himself in one shot is harrowing. And then it also has one of the weirdest John Goodman roles I have ever seen in a movie.
I did not know he was in
that. He literally is in three scenes of the movie. Elizabeth, have you seen, you've seen Community, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Have both of you seen Community at all?
I haven't.
There's a third season where John Goodman is in it, where he plays like Troy's, like Troy goes to like air conditioning school or something like that. And he's like the president or something of air conditioning school. And he has like a weird long ponytail. This movie is the reason why he has that weird long ponytail. That's not a wig. Like he actually like grew out his like hair and stuff.
John Goodman ahead of the curve.
Ahead of the curve. But of this era, and actually all the movies that are coming up after this, I have never seen. Like I've never seen Allied. I've never seen Welcome to Marwen. I've never seen The Walk with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. So like I'm excited what's to come. But like for me, like post all those CGI movies, this was a good time. So I don't know. I recommend Flight. It's a good movie. I don't know if it's streaming on anything, but check it out. I think it's good. Alyssa, what did you watch this week?
So I, of course, watched the movies that you guys selected, as well as the one I selected multiple times. And then I've been watching The Crown with my family. Since we watch it together, we're behind of the binge watching crew because it's been out. The new season's been out for a while. But we just got to an episode. I hope no one minds if I spoil this, but I think it also literally happened in real life.
So. I think everything that happened in the show happened in real life, so I can't be too mad.
Yeah, but we just got to the episode where Princess Diana surprises Charles with this live performance. Like they're at an opera and she excuses herself for a second and goes and disappears. And then suddenly she appears on stage doing a dance to Uptown Girl. And this apparently really happened, but I didn't know that before this. And he is just clearly like wincing and hating it, like Mad Men with the Zuby Zoo scene type of situation. And it's so awkward to watch. But then later after he's told her he was so embarrassed by her doing that public display, she makes a VHS tape of her performing a number from Phantom of the Opera. And I just couldn't believe what I was watching. I love when The Crown goes from like all of this policy stuff and into something that's just camp. So I really appreciated that episode. But then also I watched The Fellowship of the Ring this week because... The Lord of the Rings movies are Christmas movies to me.
I almost brought that as my pick the week before.
Oh, really? That would have been perfect. They did come out around Christmas, but also I watch them so much and they're such a comfort thing to me. So I've been watching that. And then I don't think this was this week, but time isn't a thing anymore. but I recently finished reading Shirley Jackson's The Haunting of Hill House for the first time. I was
love that book.
Reading a few of her things. Yeah, it was amazing. So I realized that the 1963 adaptation of that by Robert Wise was on Criterion Channel as part of like a queer horror series. So I watched that, and it's such a good adaptation. It's super true to the book, other than a couple of random things that they change, like the characters' names and stuff like that, that kind of annoys me. But the type of horror in it is so true to the book, where it's definitely... you don't really see anything, like it's all psychological and all, you're just terrified of what's going to happen, but it's never blatantly playing out on screen, which is great because I'm a huge baby about horror and often watch things through my fingers if I do watch them, but I still find it really fascinating. So I loved the movie. It was such an interesting adaptation. It definitely retained a lot of the, of course, because they put it in this series for Criterion. It retained all of the queer subtext of the book really well. And it was just fascinating. So I had a great time with that. I definitely recommend it.
Man, I've been meaning to see that for a while, because it's always on the list of like best horror movies or whatever.
I mean, I have a soft spot for the Netflix, the first season of that Netflix show. Well, I guess the second season.
Oh, I guess I've been watching that too.
You've been watching The Haunting of Hill House?
I watch some of them.
Oh yeah. I mean, I actually like that director. I like that show. It's just one of those things where that book is so, it's just funny to watch that that book that's like not incredibly long be stretched out into like 10 episodes of a television show. Yeah. And obviously they're taking liberties with things, and it's kind of its own entity at a certain point. But yeah, that book is, the way she describes things in that book, I haven't read that since college, but that was a good time. Shirley Jackson, good writer, controversial opinion.
Would you rather watch horror or read horror?
I think it kind of has the same effect either way. Like, I do a very bad job watching certain Stephen King adaptations, and I know that I would die if I read any of the books, so I haven't read very many of his books. I think I've actually only read The Shining, but I don't think I could ever read it, any adaptation of it that I've ever seen, ruin my life forever. So
well, you wouldn't want to read it because it's like 800 pages. I have read it. It's like 800 pages long.
That's a lot of book.
It is. Well, I mean, that's not even as long as books, so.
That's like Twilight Breaking Dawn size.
Yes, please put it in terms our listeners can understand, Elizabeth. Thank you.
which Twilight book it's most relatable to? Wait, Elizabeth, have you seen the Shirley biopic then?
I haven't. I need to watch it. I was wanting to read some of her stuff before I watched it. So I've read a few of her novels now, so I think I'm ready to watch it. I should do that next.
I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us on what we watched this week. And let's take it to our main topic, traditional favorite holiday movies. Elizabeth, what did you bring this week to talk about? What is this movie you have wrought upon us?
So this week I picked what is definitely a holiday / Christmas movie, but not like the Santa Claus or something. This week I peeked 1995's While You Were Sleeping.
For Lucy, loneliness was a way of life.
Joe Jr.'s still single.
Yeah, it's a shocker.
But the moment she saw Peter, she became a believer in love at first sight.
He was perfect.
Then fate stepped in.
Oh! Miss Mark, there's a train coming!
Oh, God, you smell good.
Now she's part of his life.
He's in a coma.
Oh, I was going to marry him.
Who's she?
She's his fiance.
No.
Peter's engaged.
She saved his life.
Part of his family.
Hey, sis. Where's my,
Lucy's going to marry my brother, Peter.
What?
I didn't mean for this to happen. I don't know what to do.
Don't tell them a thing. Well, since they met you, they figure they have Peter back. They need you, Lucy. Just like you need them.
Come on, everybody.
And the grandmother, she's got this heart thing.
She had 3 attacks already.
Now you tell them now, and you might as well shoot Grandma.
That's right. You haven't met Jack yet.
Welcome to the family.
Oh, thank you.
It's funny. My brother never mentioned you. Which one of the 3 Stooges was Peter's favorite?
Curly.
Curly. Ha! He's everybody's favorite. Fact is, you're not really Peter's type.
All right, whose type am I?
I like blondes.
You like brunettes.
What can I say, Peter? I was never envious of anything that you had until now.
Which was also featured in past guest Michaela's blog about Christmas movies recently.
Yeah.
She was saying that it's kind of an underrated classic, and I would definitely agree with her. This movie was directed by John Turteltaub, who also directed National Treasure, National Treasure, Book of Secrets, The Meg, which David loves, Cool Runnings.
Which I legitimately do love.
some Bruce Willis movie called The Kid that I don't know what it is. The Sorcerer's Apprentice, which I don't think anyone liked, but that's okay.
Oh, the Nick Cage one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He must be buddies with Nick Cage.
Oh, well, it would make sense that, like, after you make those National Treasure movies, they're like, yeah, bring back my boy Turteltaub.
Same thing you've been doing. This movie stars Sandra Bullock as Lucy, our main protagonist. She works at the Chicago Transit for the train. She just takes little tokens. That's what she does. It's established early on in the movie that her parents have both died. She doesn't really have any living relatives. So she just kind of, she works every holiday because as her boss says, you're the only one without family. So she works every holiday basically. She has been eyeing this guy named Peter who comes through the train all the time. He's beautiful and she's in love with him, but she's never talked to him. Peter is played by Mr. Eyebrows himself, Peter Gallagher.
Which I love. Great, great actor. Love him, but also love any movie where an actor just has the same name as they have in real life.
It is weird. You're like, well, he can't get confused, although... Also in the cast, playing his father is Peter Boyle. So there's just lots of Peters.
There's a lot of Peters.
But Peter Boyle, this is actually a very small role for him comparatively to like other things that I enjoy of his.
I mean, he's arguably in 1995 the biggest name in this movie, right? In 1995? Like, wouldn't Peter Boyle be the biggest name?
Right after Speed, right?
Well, then, yeah, she's like a star. Sandra's a star.
94? Yeah. So it's right.
She's a star at this point.
Well, so Bill Pullman plays Peter's brother also. Yes. And he's pretty... Is he big at this point yet? Or
he's
is
pretty
it...
big. Like, I mean, I think this is pre-Sleepless in Seattle.
No, this is post. This is 2 years after.
I'm sorry. No, this is post-Sleepless in Seattle. Is this post-Armageddon?
He was in Independence Day, which this is...
I'm sorry. I meant Independence Day. I do that all the time.
This is the same year as Casper.
Well, yeah. I mean, we stan.
It's post... I mean, he was in Spaceballs... Yeah, so it's got some stars. Peter Gallagher is probably the least famous of the mains, would you say? Yeah.
For sure, at this point. Yeah. I mean, also Peter Gallagher's like a working actor in the 80s and 90s, and he's like in many things of note. But I feel like Peter Gallagher, the OC, is what actually breaks him into like the mainstream, honestly. Like, I think people more know him from the OC now than they know him from like the films he's been in.
What year was Mr. Deeds? He was in that.
Like 2006 or something? I can't remember.
Actually, the OC is a year after Mr. Deeds.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So I don't know which one made him popular, but obviously we love him in the OC. And funny because he is also a New Girl.
Yeah, that's true. It's Schmidt's dad, right?
Mm-hmm. Literally the most perfect casting.
Yeah. So Elizabeth, I should ask this before you start talking, but what does Christmas mean? Like, what does the holiday mean to you?
What does the holiday mean to me?
And why did you pick this particular movie?
The holiday means to me Well, since most of my jobs so far post-college have also revolved around Indiana University in some sort, whether it's the cinema or catering, which obviously dies down when IU is not in session. The holiday means to me having a break from the world and kind of getting to relax and enjoy things and people around me. It means going home and seeing all of my relatives. It means cuddling up under blankies, watching cute Christmas movies, baking cookies, sort of gifts, but I've never been too concerned about the gifts, but I like giving gifts. But mostly it's just like getting to spend time with family and friends, because obviously we do like Secret Santa and stuff. And just like taking in the year, reminiscing on how it's gone, looking forward ahead to the new year, and enjoying what I have. It's a warm time. I kind of said that last week, but like Christmas is like warm and fuzzy feelings, sort of. Obviously, it's going to be a little different this year.
And so last week you picked a movie that was the opposite of that. Yeah, feeling.
I just made myself watch that movie because I'd been meaning to watch it. But this week is fuzzy and warm.
Yeah, I mean, family's a big part of this movie. It seems like you're a big family person.
In a way, I am. A woman who
doesn't have a family and essentially lies her way into a family on accident.
Yeah. Okay, so the main premise of this movie, she is in love with this man she's never talked to. He comes to the train all the time. He gets pushed onto the tracks, and this train is coming. She saves his life. And then goes to the hospital because this guy is being taken in the hospital. And he's unconscious. They won't let her see him. And she whispers under her breath to herself, I was going to marry that man. Like, just because, like, she's secretly in love with him. But a nurse hears and thinks it's actually his fiance.
Because, once again, she whispers under her breath. This is not something she, like, shouts out loud.
Right.
But the nurse thinks that she's actually her, his fiance.
And yeah, so she gets her in, but then his whole crazy family shows up, and the nurse is like, this is his fiance. And she's like, okay.
I mean, just to jump to, like, why this movie is wild. Bill Pullman is Peter Gallagher's brother.
Yeah.
Who shows up later. Like, actually, they hold off on him for a while in the movie. Because I was expecting him to show up a lot sooner.
Yeah, they keep referencing him, but for some reason, he's always not there.
Yes. He's not estranged. He's just,
busy.
He's doing his own thing. He's busy.
He's building rocking chairs. That takes time.
He's a carpenter like Jesus.
Yeah. But then they fall, one, he's suspicious of her. Because, because no one's ever heard of this woman before. I mean, the whole family is suspicious of her. She essentially feels like she has to keep this lie going for some reason.
Because grandma has a heart problem, and if she tells, then grandma's gonna die. That's what they say.
This is such a wild lie to tell. if someone mistaked me for someone's significant other, I would have a panic attack and start crying. And then her and Bill Pullman fall in love.
Yeah, and now she's like, oh, I'm in love with this guy's brother.
But she has to keep up the facade. And we can't even look, this is one of these twisty, not even twisty, but just like, it's kind of farcical. Like, there are other wrinkles that we would have to actually get into the plot to explain why it's so funny.
Yeah.
But let's just say antics ensue and love blossoms.
But it's like a good script.
It is a good script. It's just one of those movies where you're just like, this is could only be a movie. Like this, if this happened in real life, everyone would go to jail. So I enjoyed this movie quite a bit.
You said you had never even heard of this movie.
Had never heard of this movie, like, let alone didn't know it was a Disney movie. Well, maybe it's a, I don't know, is it a
I
Fox
think
movie?
That it got bought up.
It got bought out.
Yeah,
okay.
It is on Disney Plus. I was very surprised.
Yes, and my only thing of a movie that I'm not even cranky about it is just that I am actually not a Sandra Bullock fan, but I do find her charming. Mm-hmm. I find whatever her, I don't really know how to describe Sandra Bullock's thing, but she has a thing. Would you guys agree? I don't know what is her thing as like a leading lady, especially in like romantic movies, whatever that is.
Her thing is like kind of like the girl next door kind of thing. Like, obviously she's pretty, but she's never played as like the bombshell. She's not right. like Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
But she's like snarky, sarcastic, but in like a cute way.
Would you agree, Alyssa? Is that?
Yeah, for sure. She's always down to earth, a little bit awkward. Yeah, snarky is definitely a good one. Never, or rarely, I guess, super dressed up. I know she's played like some very successful characters as well. But this kind of character who's kind of like a working class, kind of like quietly beautiful woman is more of what I associate her with.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree that's a pretty good summation of what her thing is. And I think it works really well in this movie. I do like the fact that she works for the CTA. I just assumed she would, it was the 90s, so I just assumed it was going to be some like office job. I thought it was going to be a lot like Batman Returns. And unlike Batman Returns, this movie acknowledges that if you look like Sandra Bullock, you will be hounded by a creep. Like, you won't want for attention, because we get Michael Rispoli, who people may know from The Sopranos. At least that's where I know him from, most famously.
Who is he in The Sopranos?
He is...
Jackie Aprile Sr.?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he is Jackie Aprile Sr. In The Sopranos. And I don't know, I was just delighted when he showed up in the movie. I was just like, oh, hell yeah, a meatball just walked into the frame. he plays her like next door neighbor, or same floor, or like same building neighbor, I guess, at the very least, who is, I do like the little detail that he's like interested in trying on women's clothing. It's never fleshed out. It's just that at one point he hides in her closet and he's trying on her heels. And I just thought that was interesting. I also like the fact that like he's not like a creep. He's just like a meathead.
Yeah. He's just kind of like, why won't you date me?
Yes. I mean, he's annoying. Like, I guess if this person was hounding you, you'd be like, please stop. I do like the fact that they do at the end of the movie, like, at least admit that his heart's in the right place, even though he's bad at saying it. Anyway, lovely character actor that I like seeing pop up in things. Alyssa, how did you like this movie?
I really liked it. And this was also the first time I'd ever seen it. I'd heard of it, but I hadn't heard anything about the plot. And the title to me sounds like some sort of suspense film. So I had no idea that it was this. But I really liked it. I loved Sandra's character, and her wardrobe and kind of the texture of her life kind of reminded me of Practical Magic a little bit. So it was like Christmas Practical Magic to me. And also, so many Christmas or holiday movies in general just kind of rely on everyone's family's annoying traits and how much they drive the main character crazy as a source of humor, and no one really seems to particularly like each other, which is a totally fine route to go. But I appreciated how Peter's family is so quirky, and she absolutely loves it from the get-go. It's never played off as too intense or too much for her or annoying. It's always just like pure love, and I really appreciated that, especially the grandma and all her weird non sequiturs that she says.
Yeah, I like I enjoy this movie. I enjoy that there's a it's not really a running gag, because it only happens twice, but there's a thing that's in the credits of the movie and then later in like a establishing shot of the movie where I don't know if it's the same guy, but someone is ice skating and then they face plant ice skating during the credits of the movie. And then later, I think it might be the same person. They're like riding a bicycle to deliver papers, and then they just wipe out completely.
People falling.
And it's never remarked upon. This person's not a character in the movie. It's just like a gag that's just kind of tossed in. But Elizabeth, I will say the only thing about this movie, while I still think it's very much more of a traditional Christmas movie, it is funny that Christmas is at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, so he gets into his accident on Christmas and they spend it in the hospital because he's in a coma this whole time while she's falling in love with his brother.
What is the timeline on this movie, roughly?
So Christmas Day is the accident. And then the next day she celebrates Christmas with his family because they think she's going to be a part of the family. And then some time, and I know New Year's happens, and then a little bit more time after that. I'm not sure how long it is between like the like end of the climax and the end of the movie. They don't do like a 2 weeks later kind of thing, do they? I can't even remember. And
I don't think so. But I mean, it does show her taking down her Christmas tree at some point.
Yeah. So Christmas is over, New Year's is over, and then a few days or weeks later, then it ends. So probably like a month.
It's just funny because I don't know if he was, when I was watching the movie until they mentioned New Year's, I was like, I don't know if he's been in this coma for a day or 6 months at this point. It's just the time's a little weird. But yeah. I did very much enjoy this movie. Thank you for bringing this, Elizabeth. Yes. This was a good time while you were sleeping. I think it's on Disney Plus. Check it out. I don't know if there's anyone we forgot in the movie besides characters that we didn't bring up because we'd have to get more into the plot.
Yeah. One of my favorite parts of the movie is the joke where she runs into his coworker and he tells her about the accident at work, and that's how she convinces the family that she's actually his fiance. Because why would she know?
Yes, that was wild.
And then, I mean, like, obviously you can assume at some point this man wakes up because he's just not eternal.
Yes, because also they cast once again, Peter Gallagher, not like a huge movie star at this point, but like a known actor. And you don't just, so.
He's good at playing like really dumb too.
He's very, yes, like, very,
I know
very.
Everyone here except this woman. And they're like, what do you mean? And he's like, I don't know. I must know her.
It's like he thinks he has selective amnesia.
Just her, though. The only part of his life that was erased.
So good. Well, with that, we will move on to my pick for traditional holiday movies. And I have chosen the movie by Satoshi Kon, Tokyo Godfathers.
This bundle of joy is a Christmas present sent from God. She's our baby now.
Huh? You know what sounds a lot weirder? The fact we have a crying baby in here.
I'm not saying you're wrong, but what can we do about it?
Find her parents.
You want to find her parents? You're trying to play house when we're three good-for-nothing bums who can't even look after ourselves. We did everything we could do. We're bums, not action movie stars.
All right, let's ring in the new year by taking out the trash.
I don't think I'm gonna fit.
Yeah, it's a Christmas miracle.
I got into Satoshi Kon. It's probably at some point in college. It's just hard for me to remember. I'd remember hearing about Paranoia Agent in high school, but I had never seen it, which is like the 13th episode anime.
Okay, I was like, I don't know that one.
It's a famous 13-episode show. It's very much in line with everything he made. But for those who don't know, Satoshi Kon is an anime director who passed away very suddenly in 2010. He had cancer, but he kept it secret. And so when he passed away, no one knew that it was coming except for his spouse. But he's very much a director who had a heavy influence on directors in the 2000s. Like Darren Aronofsky directly lifted shots from Perfect Blue for Requiem for a Dream. Christopher Nolan directly references Paprika multiple times in the movie Inception. It's not like, you know, for those who might not be so deep into the anime world, he doesn't really make, they're not like Studio Ghibli movies. They're not like these soft, you know, kind of whimsical movies. He makes a lot of dark, more adult movies that deal with usually deal with time and space and people's perceptions of reality. And, you know, they're more they're psychological movies. Like all the movies kind of delve into the character psychology, especially Perfect Blue. But this movie's kind of a weird outlier in his filmography because while there are some magical realist elements in it, especially near the end of the movie, which always gives me a heart attack, even though I've seen the movie five times at this point, it's very much a grounded movie about three homeless people on Christmas Eve who one is a, you know, I will just say, because it's different based on what I've read about it. People have described this character as a different way, but I'm going to describe them as a trans woman because they've been described as a drag queen. They've been described as queer at one point. I think they call themselves queer in the movie. But I will say a trans woman a runaway, and an alcoholic. These are all three homeless people. They're all friends and they all live together in the same space. And they find a baby on Christmas Eve, and they essentially start the movie kind of wanting to take care of the baby. Miss Hannah, the trans woman, wants to keep the baby just because it's like it represents something for her. Like, she's never gotten to take care of somebody and she's had her own losses in her life. And eventually they decide that maybe they should like find this baby's home. And it's an odyssey taking place on one night, and people's stories are intersecting with each other. Miracles happen. So I'm just kind of curious, because I brought this because I do kind of watch this around the Christmas season, because I think I mentioned last week, Christmas for me is like a melancholy time of the year. It's about lost souls kind of finding each other. And to me, this is like the pinnacle of lost souls finding each other. But it's also, which I didn't mention last week, like a time for like redemption. And this is a movie about people realizing that they're like worthy of redemption. Like, they're allowed to like correct the mistakes that they've made in their life, or at least like not run away from them anymore. So I'm curious what you guys thought of this movie.
So this is the second time I've seen this movie. I watched it for the first time at this old thing called Cinema Club that we used to do back when the world was normal, where we would just all gather and once a week watch a movie together. And so in December, we'd watch Christmas movies. And this was one that we watched. This is one of two movies of his that I've seen. I've also seen Millennium Actress.
Yes, wonderful movie.
But so I've only seen those two, and I feel like Perfect Blue and like Ghost in the Shell and the Studio Ghibli movies are like the ones that you hear about when you hear people talk about anime film. So I want to watch that eventually, but I was excited to watch this movie by him. But I really enjoy it. Obviously, what year is this movie? 2003?
It's 2003.
Obviously, it's a product of its time, and maybe culture. I'm not really sure about Japanese culture, but it was also made by a man, so that maybe had some influence in it. The treatment of the trans character is a little iffy sometimes, and they use some slurs, which is a little off-putting. It took me a while to kind of get past that at the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
But I definitely, like you were saying, you were talking about like how people like describe this person. And I feel like she definitely is trans, because
she describes herself as a her.
Yeah. And she like, I don't think that like a drag queen, if a drag queen identifies as a woman.
No, usually not. At least what I've been told to people who are into drag culture, like.
Yeah.
Unless they are trans themselves, they refer to themselves as he, him.
Yeah, there's just some iffy things throughout the film. See, at the same time, it's like it kind of gives a lot of respect to this character outside of these like jokes that don't necessarily need to even be in there. So it's like really like messy. But I like the film overall. I like the characterization that was given to this character, especially at a time when those words were still being used just in everyday life as insults.
Yes. I mean, at the time this movie comes out, like the slurs that are used in this movie are actually used every day. These are slurs I would hear in high school regularly.
Oh yeah. So it was very nice to see, although it's kind of like, what's that movie? Julie Newmar, where it's like good representation for the time, and it can be appreciated for that, I think. Would you agree?
Yeah. Oh, I think this is, I mean, I, you know, outside of like the actual characters in the movie and their point of view, I actually feel like the people making the movie aren't identifying with the characters using the slurs. I think Miss Hannah in this movie is treated with as much respect and disrespect as the other two homeless people in the movie. I mean, simply because they're all on the same level playing field of all being homeless, which has its own stigma, which like the movie is also like not on the side of people like literally treating them like trash. It's just that, you know, she gets called out more for being a trans woman than, say, Jen gets called out for being an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Alyssa, how did you feel about this movie?
Yeah, I would totally agree with what you just said, that from the outside perspective of the filmmaker, she's treated very well. Because, I mean, you do see, even when these characters are saying those things that made me wince throughout the film, they stick with her the whole time and they clearly love her. And that in and of itself, especially at this time, is a pretty big deal. And I appreciated seeing that. I also just appreciated that in such a short time, it goes to these horrible, dark places of the terrible things they say to each other, the terrible things that happen to them, but then also these really funny things that happen, like when the angel appears. And also these wild coincidences and opportunities for redemption. It's just, it all fits together and ends up being really charming, even though there are those parts that are kind of like, oh, but yeah, I really appreciated the chance to watch this. I had never seen it before either. And so I'm really glad that you brought it here today.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, this movie, I mean, like I said, this is more of an adult drama than I would classify it as a movie meant for children or adolescents. Although, I mean, I would show this to a teenager just so they could, you know, see different perspectives from the outside world. But like, just the fact this is a Christmas movie, which like, obviously I also don't know a lot about Japan itself, but like, there's a whole segment about like an immigrant family, and the movie at no point like makes any jokes about the fact that there's this Spanish speaking family. I don't know if they're Mexican or if they're actually from Spain. I'm not sure.
It definitely seemed more Latin American Spanish because there was no.
Yes, there's no lisp. I don't know what you call it, but I always called it a lisp. No disrespect to European Spanish people. But like, there's no, like, they treat them with respect. And there's like this nice scene where the girl and the, you know, she's through some circumstances that I can't really get into, she is kidnapped, kind of. But her and this mother are like speaking, and like, they're kind of understanding each other without actually speaking to each other, like, you know, without speaking the same language at all. And
that's probably one of my favorite scenes in the film.
I love
it. Is when they're interacting.
Yeah, see, it makes me cry. Just because also you're getting the backstory of this girl and like why she ran away in the first place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the very unfortunate circumstances. And you see old pictures of herself. You don't realize like how long she's been run away until you see her, like how much she's aged in that time. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just think Christmas, especially because I've been watching different versions of a Christmas Carol, like I wanted to bring something that was about redemption. Mm-hmm. I think this time of the year people are pretty hard on themselves, especially because the new year is coming up, and then you look back at what you've accomplished or didn't accomplish or what's happened and all the bad in the world. And I think that it's important to like sometimes watch a movie that's just like a, hey, you are worthy of correcting the mistakes that you have made in your life. You know, no, you don't have to like shoulder that burden for your whole life. But then also I just like this movie because there's like an energy to it and it's pretty funny. And like I said, the last act of this movie, when like all the reveals and coincidences like make themselves like plain and you're just like, oh no, oh my God. When all of it starts to click and you're just like, oh, okay. Everything's been like slowly set up to like this last 15 minutes for me to just like have my jaw hit the ground. For this poor baby that's being tossed around.
This baby is so funny looking to me. Like, it's like cute, but like funny.
Yes. There's a funny gag in this movie because since this is an animated movie, at one point there's a police sketch in the movie of the baby, but it looks like an 8-year-old drew it, because I think that's the best way they could communicate. Because if they drew it to life, it would just look the same. So they were like, well, I guess we have to make it look way more rudimentary.
It's like straight on and its arms are just kind of like up by its head.
Yes.
Like, this baby, and it's got like the baby has like a mole in the middle of its forehead. It's so funny. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm glad you guys enjoyed this movie. I highly recommend it to anybody. I recommend all the films of Satoshi Kon. Like, actually all of his movies in Paranoid Agent are now available, like on easily available for the first time in years. I think there were like licensing issues on his movies and TV shows for a long time, so highly recommend this one. You can check this one out on Crackle and Hoopla if you have a library, a card, or account. Well, with that, we will go to, weirdly enough, the movie I'm most excited to talk about of the three. Alyssa, what is your pick?
Well, everyone listening, please pour yourselves a glass of Chardonnay and put on your finest spun ivory cashmere cardigan, because we're talking about the 2006 film The Holiday, directed and written by Nancy Meyers.
Iris and Amanda are in exactly the same place.
Where do I want to go by myself, depressed at Christmas?
Just 6,000 miles apart.
Home exchange. We switch houses, cars, everything. Bingo. I need you to answer this.
Are there any men in your town?
Perfect.
We're on our way to New Jerusalem.
I'm here.
I'm here.
As one door closes,
that'll be interesting.
Another one opens.
Oh.
Hello.
I'm Miles.
I'm Graham, Iris's brother.
Do you want some company?
Yeah, love some.
Excuse me?
Okay, sorry about that. Boob grace.
That was accidental.
You know, Graham, I just broke up with someone. And considering that you showed up and you're insanely good looking and probably won't remember me anyway, I'm thinking we should have sex. If you want.
Is that a trick question?
Seems I had it all wrong. It turns out you'll go somewhere new and meet people who make you feel worthwhile again.
It's Christmas Eve, and we are going to celebrate being young and being alive.
I selected this quite a bit ago, and just in the past 48 or so hours, Nancy has become a very fraught topic online. Yes. So I'm interested to get to that later, but first, to start with the film, I know a lot of people are already familiar with it. It's a wonderful ensemble, kind of two rom-coms rolled into one. We have one with Cameron Diaz and Jude Law going on in England, and one with Kate Winslet and Jack Black going on in Los Angeles. So I have been watching this movie since it came out. When I was 16, and it is every year that I watch it, I feel like it grows on me, and that's something important to me in a holiday movie, is just an endless rewatchability, and it's comfortable and cozy, but also you don't get tired of it. And I think that's definitely true of all of the Nancy Meyers favorites, like Something's Gotta Give, It's Complicated, and The Parent Trap. The Parent Trap might be my other favorite. But yeah, so I just appreciate this genre can be so simplified and everything, but every time I watch it, it puts a smile on my face, and I notice something new about it that Nancy has embedded into the world of the story. So for anyone who hasn't seen it, so what happens is Cameron goes through a terrible breakup with her boyfriend, played by Ed Burns. And she is yelling at him, throwing shoes at him. She is immediately set up as this kind of emotionally unavailable character who pushes people away. Kate is totally the opposite, hopeless romantic, in love with a coworker of hers who she used to date, played by Rufus Sewell, very smarmily. And she finds out at their office Christmas party that he is engaged to another one of their coworkers. And so Cameron and Kate have both had enough and just need a break, which I think is something Nancy is so great at writing, is these women just on the point of losing it. So they find each other on this home exchange website and switch houses for 2 weeks around Christmas. So Cameron goes to Kate's perfect little picturesque cottage in the Cotswolds, and Kate goes to Cameron's gorgeous giant LA mansion, which is mostly in the aesthetic of what you expect from Nancy Meyers movies, with the giant sprawling kitchen and everything just so. So that's what kind of sets off our stories. Cameron soon after meets Jude Law, who is Kate Winslet's brother in the film, And Kate has two glorious meet cutes. The first with Jack Black's character Miles, who plays a film composer. And then a bit later with Eli Wallach's character Arthur Abbott, who is this Hollywood veteran writer. And both of those stories are just so charming. So yeah, I just really appreciate how this works as an ensemble. I just looked it up right before this, and this came out 3 years after Love Actually, which I feel like is the most infamous big ensemble, tons of celebrity Christmas rom-com. And this sort of has that in that there is a ton going on in the background in a lot of stories within the romantic comedy stories. But a lot of the stories in Love Actually end up being kind of a bummer. And the ones in The Holiday are just wonderful through and through. So I really like that about that. The further out of the couples ensembles, Eli Wallach and then the two little girls who end up later being in the film, just adds so much character and charm to it. And you really feel like, because Eli himself is also a Hollywood legend, and so I feel all of his stories that he tells throughout it are so real. And the parts with the little kids feel very free rolling and improvised, like they are just little kids being kids, and it's so sweet. So that's me rambling about all the things that I love about it.
No, thank you. why this movie? So I mean, you kind of mentioned it. So like, what is Chris, like, what does The Holiday mean to you, the actual season of The Holiday?
Yeah.
Why in particular do you enjoy this movie so much? I know why I enjoy this movie, because I'm a recent convert to it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think I said a lot of it, but to me, The Holidays is a lot of wanting to feel cozy and wanting to sort of forget your troubles for a while, and be with people that you care about. I live with my mom and sister, who are the people who I will have watched this movie with probably 10 jillion times. So yeah, that just warmth and coziness and sort of lived in type of familiarity that you don't get tired of, that comes with the season, I think is embodied really well in this. And also, this movie actually covers three holidays: Christmas, Hanukkah, and New Year's. And all of them have their own really special aspect in the film. So I like that about it too.
Elizabeth?
I love this movie for so many reasons. This is probably maybe, I want to say my second favorite Christmas movie.
Whoa.
But also that's like, maybe. Like I would need to take stock of all of the Christmas movies that I like, because I feel like there are a lot that I just like can't think of. But it's definitely in the top five for me. Everything about this movie is just so darn cute. It's so cute. It is so warm and like comforting, just like all of Nancy's movies. Like, I grew up watching The Parent Trap. And I think I know I've definitely seen most of them with my family even. It's complicated. I saw, that's a weird story, but about this movie, but I saw it on like a women's night at the Batesville like local theater. They had like boxed dinners, and me and my mom went because like, who else was she gonna take? Not my sisters. But so me and my mom went together, and we like went to the like vintage old like one screen theater in Batesville, and we had like our little meal, and we watched It's Complicated, which is like a little weird to watch with your mom when you're like a teenager, just because like
it's about a woman hooking up with her ex-husband,
right?
But like somehow I've just seen a lot of these, and like Father of the Bride was one that she wrote too, and has a lot of like Nancy like Nancy touch on it, and like Father of the Bride Part Two, and my parents love those movies. So it was just something I kind of grew up with. And then I saw The Holiday when I was a teenager, and I was like, where's this movie been all my life? It's so good. And Jude Law is very attractive. Like, I always go to the map for this movie because this is my what I think like Jude Law's peak attractiveness is in this movie.
Now, if you had a word to describe Jude Law, maybe one that starts with a D, ends with a Y, what would it be?
He calls himself this in the movie for those of you who haven't seen it. So this is not just me being really gross.
It's one of the best moments of the movie, in my opinion. Yes, that is lovely. I didn't come to Nancy Meyers until, well, so Nancy Meyers was always ubiquitous because I grew up in the aughts and like she was the queen of the romantic comedy essentially. And so like you just couldn't escape these movies either playing on TV or seeing the trailers for them. I wasn't really aware that they were all by the same person at the time, but had the like inkling that they were at some point. And I had remember catching this movie on cable in like 2008, maybe it was HBO, because I'm a big Jack Black fan. And I had remembered that this was like the time period in which like he had finally become like a leading man and not just like the funny sidekick character in movies. Like this is like post King Kong and post School of Rock, I'm pretty sure at this point. And so I was just like, okay, I was thinking of more of as like a Kate Winslet, Jack Black movie, which is why I think I enjoy that part of the movie more than I enjoy the Jude Law, Cameron Diaz part. I don't not enjoy that part of the movie. It's just the part where I'm like, okay, well, this is clearly the part that Nancy Meyers is the most invested in because it's kind of probably about her a little bit because it's about a Hollywood, you know, someone who's like in the film industry. And I remember liking it, but not really ever thinking about it. And then a couple years ago, I went through all of Nancy Meyers' films. When I finally got to this one, I was so charmed by it, and I completely understood why like everyone watches this movie around this time of the year. Like there are parts of it that are like a little wild in retrospect, but I think that's this kind of the territory that romantic comedies operate in. Wild things have to happen in them, you know, in order for their charm to shine through. But I really enjoy, I don't know, like I don't really have any like deep, you know, thoughts on this movie. I just really enjoy like how comfy it is. I think it's adorable when Kate Winslet, you know, gets Eli Wallach that Lifetime Achievement Award or gets into the ceremony. I think Eli Wallach is incredibly charming. This is at the point, I know Chris Rock made that joke about Jude Law at the Academy Awards, like not long after this movie came out, about like Jude Law is everywhere or whatever. But like, I find Jude Law like a very charming person. So that era when she was popping up in all those movies, I was like way on board for.
What is this joke? I don't know what this is.
Oh, I guess he might be like a little young for it, but there's like an infamous Academy Awards where Chris Rock, it's the first time Chris Rock hosted the Academy Awards. And I'll put the audio in here.
You can't get a star, wait. If you want Tom Cruise and all you can get is Jude Law, wait. Not the same thing, okay? Who is Jude Law? Why is he in every movie I have seen the last 4 years? He's in everything. Even the movies he's not acting in. If you look at the credits, he made cupcakes or something. He's in everything. He's gay, he's straight, he's American, he's British. Next year, he's playing Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in the movie.
But then the thing that makes it weird is that Sean Penn shows up later in the ceremony and he's like very humorlessly just being like, Jude Law is one of our finest actors. And like,
he took that personally.
Took it very personally. But yeah, I mean, like I said, I enjoy the Kate Winslet Jack Black part just because I think Jack Black's really cute in this movie. I think it might annoy some people, but like them going through that Blockbuster and him just singing movie themes at her. Also he's like a film composer, which I'm already in the bag for. But yeah, I don't know if I have anything deeper to add to it. I think this movie is really good, and I probably will watch it every year from now on around this time of the year. I think I've mentioned the Dustin Hoffman thing because when they're in the Blockbuster at one point, he's talking about the movie that Dustin Hoffman's in, and it cuts to Dustin Hoffman looking at a movie in Blockbuster. He has no words, no dialogue, just smiles, and then it cuts back to.
He actually does ad lib a little thing. He says, "You can't go anywhere," or something like that, after he overhears Zach Black singing the song.
Was it? I feel like I read somewhere that that scene was like just an accident. Like she just saw him at the Blockbuster.
No, he saw that they were filming at the Blockbuster, and I guess he had a ton of time on his hands because he just walked over there and was like, "What's up, guys?" And she ended up putting him in. So he was just wearing the clothes he walked in there on and just ad-libbing.
It's hilarious because it's like sweats or something.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I mean, it makes it funnier because it's like, I guess this is what Dustin Hoffman would wear if he went to a Blockbuster to just like rent a movie.
Yeah.
Well, I think you miss Blockbuster. Although like we have the video store here, so it's like basically the same thing.
It's basically the same, but better.
David, you mentioned School of Rock and a Jack Black fun fact that I found out from watching The Holiday with Nancy Meyers' commentary on it is that she actually cast him in this because of School of Rock solely.
Yeah, as she should, his finest role.
Yeah. She was saying like he just seemed so warm and tender with the children, and she wanted that sort of quality for the character. And I totally see that. I feel like it's very much a softer version of the School of Rock character. Sometimes it's weird. Especially paired with Kate Winslet. It's such an odd couple, but I love that.
They are an odd couple, but then by the time they get to like the end of the movie where they're spending New Year's together, like you totally understand why they like each other. Like one, like she's been so preoccupied with like being in love with like this man who's a giant jerk or whatever. And you know, I could very easily see like, well, she's Kate Winslet, so if you're Jack Black, you see Kate Winslet, and you're like, yes, I would like to talk to this person. but, like, yeah, like, the fact that he's just, like, this warm, very charming, like, actually has interests, effusive, like, adores her. Yeah, of course it makes sense that these two would be together, because it seems like they'll have, like, a healthy relationship in which they support each other. Which I think this is why this movie is so charming, that it's about two romances, about people. Like, what's the biggest conflict in this movie besides her jerk? It's not even her ex. Is it her ex?
Yeah,
kind of.
Yeah.
Like her jerk ex, and then Cameron's biggest thing is that she can't get out of her own way almost.
Yeah, it's her own lack of vulnerability. Very Nancy conflicts to have.
But like none of the conflicts come from like, and then it turns out Jude Law actually has a secret wife. Like none of that happens in this movie, which I think is why it's so pleasant to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But you brought up Nancy Meyers being on everyone's lips the past couple of days because of an article, right? Correct?
Yes. Do you want me to explain?
Yeah, we can get into it. I find Nancy Meyers a super interesting person, so I enjoyed this interview a lot.
Yeah, same. So this week, a writer at the Vulture, her name is Rachel Handler, has been doing Nancy Meyers Week and every day releasing a few articles, interviews with people who have been in Nancy's films, and then just some other kind of compilations of stuff. And then one that she called I think a chaotic taxonomy of the Nancy Meyers universe, which I've only ever read that word and never said it out loud. So sorry if I said it wrong. So in that, she's kind of ranking all of Nancy Meyers movies based on their Nancy Meyersness. And it like gets points which she's tallying as white wine glasses. So like you get a white wine glass if there's a divorce, you get a white wine glass if Diane Keaton is in it, you lose a white wine glass if anything truly dangerous ever happens or politics are discussed or anything like that. So it's funny and it's reducing her work down to her tropes, but it's very clearly in a super loving, celebratory, fun way. The Nancy Meyers daughter, Hallie, Hallie Meyers-Shire.
Director of Going Home?
Oh my gosh, mm-hmm. As soon as you said Reese that, I forgot.
Home Again.
Yeah, she wrote and direct the Reese Witherspoon film Home Again from a few years ago. Rachel Handler chose to include that film on the list, which I think is kind of the crux of what the problem is here, because she included it and kind of said, like, Hallie technically directed it, but it's very much a Nancy Meyers type of aesthetic and universe. But she called it kind of like a poor imitation of it. So Hallie takes to Instagram and posts that it's very sexist of this writer to be reducing Nancy's work down to all of these tropes and hallmarks and things like that, arguing that that doesn't happen to male directors, which we all obviously know is false. Then, of course, saying like, I get a hard time for my benefiting from my family and my career and the nepotism of it all. But that doesn't happen to people whose filmmaker parents are men, like Sofia Coppola. Also, we obviously know is objectively not true. So she is clearly upset, and probably mostly because of the criticism of her own movie, if I had to guess. But there's also within that whole Nancy Myers week an interview with Nancy herself. And I kind of feel like with the recognizing tropes thing, I would not be surprised if Nancy's own opinion about whether that's supposedly sexist isn't too far off from her daughter's, because she seems to kind of reject it and kind of refuse to acknowledge that stuff as important in any way, which I think is interesting. Like, part of what makes her stuff so good is that she kind of rebukes the idea that comedy and romantic comedy and women-centered stories are less than or are not artistically worthy. And she gives them the same sort of meticulousness that you would see to like a period piece or like a fantasy where you're building the whole world from the ground up. And I really appreciate that, because that's why these movies are so amazing. But at the same time, I think there's sort of, well, there definitely is a white feminist kind of aspect to that. That's like, I want to be spoken of the same way that these male directors are. I want that same power and privilege and gravitas without ever really interrogating the power and privilege and gravitas. Like, I think it's great to be celebrating these more traditionally feminine qualities of her movies, as though as they're as important as these other things. And it's fine that they're traditionally feminine and not a problem. You know, she seems to have a problem with that. And I don't agree with her. What do you guys think?
Yeah, no.
I mean, what you just said in that way, like, I think I definitely agree with everything you said. And then, like, in being offended by this and taking it to the mat, basically, and being like, how dare you like say these sexist things? You like ignoring those is sort of sexist, you know, like the movie, like this is just what people appreciate about it. You've obviously like, it's not like you didn't include it. It's there.
Right.
You know, you can't say like, I didn't mean to do that. It's in all of your films. It's a part of the world that you're creating. Who cares? You know, like we're having fun.
Yeah. She, in that interview, and also many times, has also pointed about her movies that these are all pretty autobiographical. Like, most of the movies she makes are about herself,
right,
in some capacity. So, like, you know, whether or not you agree or find things sexist or whatever about them, to a certain extent, like, they are about her. And so she's just kind of putting herself out into that, like, into that realm. So, like, I, you know, maybe to a certain extent, she's taking the offense that, like, you're judging her for her own life experiences, which I totally understand, because when she's making these movies, she's probably just coming from the standpoint of like, I'm making entertaining movies that are like loosely based off of my own life experiences, which is what most creatives do. But she just happens to be kind of what I would classify in the realm of an auteur, where she has all these like very recognizable tropes within her movies. So it makes it easy for people to like pin down certain things about her. But like, I forget what I was listening to, but someone essentially compared her to David Fincher, in that, you know, we praise David Fincher for the fact that he does his like 56 takes on a movie, you know, like no thread out of place. But like, Nancy Myers literally does the same thing in every single movie she's ever made. Like, I think in It's Complicated, she built that house from scratch. Like, they actually built that house set. Like, it's a full house.
I think that's what she usually does. I think the mansion and the cottage and the holiday are both built.
Yeah. And we praise, like, you know, we praise Parasite for doing that. And yet when it comes to Nancy Myers, we're like, oh, well, why would you do that? You could just film this in an apartment or whatever. But like, I don't know. I think there's a reason why her movies have endured, and like all of the copycat movies that have popped up on like Netflix and Hulu and things like that, people stop talking about after a week, because I think there's the assumption, oh, I can make a Nancy Myers movie. Those things were probably made like for $10 million in like 2 weeks. And it's like, no, they were made for like $50 million over the course of months. like they're so intentional. That's why I find her such an interesting person. Also, just the fact in that interview, like when she gets asked, have you seen any good romantic comedies lately? She's just like, nope. Well, I liked Fleabag.
Yeah, that's a stretch for romantic comedy, but I'll take it.
Yes. But it just kind of adds to like her, you know, for as much respect as I just pay to her, I think she's got like a weird brain kind of, which I think all creative people do to a certain extent. So like, yeah, the woman who makes the like kind of fluffy, like nice, warm sweater movies like her favorite romantic comedy in like the last like whatever it was, they said like 5 years, is Fleabag.
Yeah,
first season it has no romance in it near the end or whatever. So
yeah,
I find that fascinating.
And just the fact all of these celebrities commenting on this Instagram post are commenting with the things that Hallie was criticizing from the article. They're like, yeah, I'm agreeing with you next to my glass of Chardonnay, and you're like,
that's exactly what Rachel Handler was doing with the piece. It
like the disconnect is so large,
mm-hmm,
with celebrities.
It is. It is very large. But I would say as you said, a modern classic,
mm-hmm,
in my opinion. I actually feel like on my Letterboxd I've now rated it too low, so I think I'm going to go change that. Anyway, my last question about this film before we should wrap up is, I do this to Elizabeth all the time and she doesn't want me to make her choose, but like, which segment, Cameron and Jude or Jack and my brain just went dead for a second. Kate, for some reason. Kate, thank you.
Yeah, I have to go Jack and Kate. I love Kate as an actress. I think she does such an amazing job with this, and their story is so adorable. I would not give up the Eli Wallach portion of the story for anything. I love when Jack pulls up and they first meet and the Cinema Paradiso score is wafting out of his convertible. Just like all of that is amazing. I would mourn the loss of the cottage because that's the best house in it to me. And actually Jude Law's house in it is also incredible. But yeah, their story is just so sweet, and they're both kind of unlikely rom-com leads, and I love that.
Yeah, as much as like Jude and Cameron are the heartthrob couple, mm-hmm, I always tend to side with like the cutesy, goofy couple. So definitely I think like I would rather see more of Kate and Jack or Kate and Eli Wallach.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that would be nice. Oh man, if they made a Holiday too, that would be nice, but unfortunately Eli Wallach is no longer with us. Although, even though he's playing a man who the thing is that he's very old in the movie, he lived for like another 8 or 9 years after movie. He lived a long time.
he and his Jewish friends are
so charming. That whole perfect sequence.
Yeah.
Oh man. I will say
my only gripe with this movie is that Kate leaves her dog with a stranger.
Yes.
Which any dog owner is not gonna do that.
I wish they would discuss that. Like, oh, by the way, you're gonna have to take care of my dog. Are you cool with that? Yeah, I love dogs, or something to assure the audience that like it was fine. Or that she like took the dog to Jude's for the vacation or something. Agreed, Elizabeth.
I mean, you already know I'm in the can for Jack and Kate. Although I will say I will agree with what Elizabeth said a couple of weeks ago about the Holiday, and that like Jude Law is so attractive in this movie, and he sells being like a single father like really well. I don't know, just the Mr. Napkin Head thing always brings a little smile to my face.
Yeah. You know, David, you know that the fake Criterion Closet on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
They had one that I sent to Alyssa because I knew she had picked this, and it was just like the whole cover is just Mr. Napkin Head, and it says
he's smoking. It's amazing.
Like, I'll never have kids, but if any of my friends have kids, I will 100% just co-opt Mr. Napkinhead as my own bit until they're old enough to Wikipedia it or catch it on TV and realize that I'm a hack and I stole it.
15 and they watch The Holiday and they're like, what?
Well, I'm going to wrap it up. This has been a delightful episode. Alyssa, thank you so much for being on this episode. This has been wonderful. I was really wanting to go out on the year with something just very light and fluffy. So thank you for that. Thank you. And you've been a wonderful guest. Where can people find you if you want to be found? If you don't want to be found, that's fine. You can plug anything you want.
I do not want to be found. I mean, I don't care if I'm found. I just don't really use my social media. So you can follow the iCinema social media if you want to read my updates on what's coming up on stuff and my retweets of David about the podcast and other cool things.
Elizabeth?
As usual, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram and Letterboxd at my name, Elizabeth Rao. David.
You can find me on Twitter at Samurai Flicks, on Letterboxd and Instagram at Robert Dolphy, which I guess I need to spell. Some people have asked about that. RobertDolphy. No F.
Confusing.
It's a dumb in joke from about a jazz musician. Anyway, and I'd like to thank Brittany Friesen for us doing this podcast. This has been a wonderful return to the year. This is our last episode. This won't be the last episode in the feed of the year. I'm going to try to see if I can post some like past content around New Year, but this will be our last episode for the next couple of weeks. And I just want to say this has been a great return. I'm so happy Elizabeth has come back and done this with me. Thank John and Brittany once again for taking a chance on us and, you know, giving us like employment doing this, something that we largely did for free for a very long time because we just enjoyed doing it. So,
I can't wait till we can cram everyone into the tiny little library studio again.
I know. Yeah, I can't wait to do in-person records again. It's just not the same. But I hope everyone stays safe. I hope the next couple of weeks treat everyone well. Please be kind to yourselves. Seek redemption if you haven't. Be warm, be cozy. Try to fall in love with someone who's in a coma. You know, all the fun things.
Normal,
very chill things. But with that, this has been A Place for Film. We'll see you at the movies. Merry Happy Christmas. Holidays.
Good night.
Bye.
Shake a hand. Wish your brother Merry Christmas.